What's been the most important book written about religion in America? There are lots of choices, but there is one book you would have to consider. The Varieties of Religious Experience, which was written just over 100 years ago by the philosopher and psychologist William James. I'm sitting here with Steve Paulson, who is a huge fan of that book. And so I'll just ask, why is that book so influential?
Because it changed the way a lot of people think about religion. I think before that, there was the common assumption that religion was all about how you read a sacred scripture, how you read the Bible, for instance, or what your pastor at church says about it. And James turned that upside down. He said, no, it's not that kind of textual authority. It's your own experience. That is what religion ultimately is about.
So who's William James and why was he able to have this much influence?
You know, there's that common phrase, spiritual but not religious. And I think that impulse really goes back to William James. And James himself, he was a fascinating guy. He had a really interesting background. He comes from this storied American family, and he never got a high school degree, never got a college degree, ended up teaching at Harvard for a number of years. But it really goes back to the way he and his siblings were brought up. His father was very open-minded. They didn't want any platitudes to come into the way they thought. And I think eventually he brought that to the way he thought about religion.
You talk about his family. Of course, for a lot of people, the brother is better known, Henry James, the American novelist.
William's younger brother, yeah. And they were very close throughout their whole lives. They were also kind of rivals. You know, they read each other's work. They also would critique each other's work. One way you could think about them is, to some degree, the study of consciousness was the family business. So William approached that in the way he thought about psychology, the way he thought about religion. And when you would think about what's the great subject of Henry James's novels, it's the way our minds work.
It is a remarkable family, and there's a lot to write about. In fact, you've interviewed the biographer of William James, Robert Richardson. What does he say about William?
Well, he's fascinated by William James, I think partly because James approached a lot of really difficult issues and was willing to live with uncertainty, was willing to say, I don't know. He and some other scientists studied psychics, people who would do seances and were trying to figure out, you know, is there anything real here? And the way Richardson writes about it, he says, William James was drawn to edges, fringes, borders, and margins. And that experience goes into his great book, The Varieties of Religious Experience. And the thing that's remarkable about that is, I mean, once you get past some of the language, it kind of feels like it could have been written yesterday.
It's a book that people often cite when they reach out and put their hands on the books that have helped them to live. And one of the things about the varieties is that it's almost all in witness form. What James does is to allow person after person after person, 45 people per chapter sort of, to say their piece, to say how it felt for them. And the result of this is this almost fire hose of primary testimony. You really can't argue it down, because here are all these people saying, this is how it felt to me, this is how it felt to me. And you add all that up and you say, now, what religion is how it feels to each.
Hmm. So what's so striking about James's understanding of religion is that he considered experience to be what's central. Did he equate religious experiences with mysticism?
No, he was looking for all kinds of religious experience, a feeling of a higher power, a feeling of well-being, a feeling of abandonment. Mysticism, though, for him remains the sort of blue flower, the best of the best.
What was his understanding of mystical experience?
The mystical experience allowed the individual mind to touch on what we'd have to call a world soul or a world mind, something larger than itself. And that feeling is mystically communicated and produces great contentment and wisdom and beatitude.
You haven't used the word God, but that sure is what it sounds like.
It does sound like that. And he would not avoid the word. What James is out to show, though, is that if you look at the religious experiences of all these people, each one seems to lead back in that direction.
So how do you think he thought about these things himself? I mean, I don't know if believing in God is the right question, but did he have some feeling of this underlying world soul? Did he have personal mystical experiences himself?
If he did, he is very careful to say he didn't, because he does not want to antagonize the people who were going to jump on him. For example, he went to a lot of seances and got in trouble with all kinds of people for his interest in spiritualism. And the scientists didn't like it that he even considered the possibility of seances and life after death. And the spiritualists hated him because he wanted the same kind of empirical proof for their claims that he wanted for oxygen and physical substances. So he had a kind of a no-win situation. But there again, he would say, if you have the experience, then that has to be counted as part of reality. James's position was that nothing's really settled. And he was unwilling to finally settle and say, well, yes, there is a supernatural, or, well, no, there isn't a supernatural. He kept it open in a kind of endlessly heroic way.
Well, what's also striking specifically about his investigation of these psychic experiences, and he wasn't alone in doing this. He had this little band of scientists he investigated with. I mean, they went to seances, they looked at mediums and tried to figure out, you know, who was the real thing and who were the frauds. Most of the ones they encountered seemed to be frauds. But there were a few who, at least William James thought, had real psychic powers, most notably a Mrs. Piper.
Mrs. Piper is James's exception. He once called her a white crow, proving that there could be such a thing as a white crow. She seemed able to read family dynamics in an astonishing way. Who in the James family was feeling badly, or who had died recently, or who had had to be buried recently. There is an enormous amount of material on this because James wrote down a lot of the seance sessions that he went to. And he was discouraged by almost every single session, and yet he didn't want to say it was a closed book. I think it's that final little refusal to say, ah, I have it. This is it permanently. It's sealed. He just wouldn't do it. Then one time he was up in Maine at a seance that was organized by a man named Dorr, who was the founder of Acadia National Park up there. And James went up in the winter to watch this small circle of mediums work around a brass rail. And he said he saw the brass rail move all by itself. It was daylight. He could see there was no problem with it. It very clearly moved, and it should have shaken his entire universe. And he said he just couldn't find himself believing it. It's a really fascinating little moment. Even when presented with what looked like the visual evidence, he wouldn't quite say this was it.
Well, there's a paradox, it seems to me, at the center of James's thinking, particularly about the mind and about these kinds of transcendent realities. On the one hand, he really thought that the mind was pretty much determined by brain function. He didn't think the mind was something separate from what the brain does. And yet, on the other hand, he seemed to be totally open to the possibility that the mind could communicate with other minds or other dimensions, which seems to be contradictory.
It does. That's very well put. What James thought might be true was that there might be a threshold in the mind where the individual mind touches a larger mind. It's a sort of Jungian idea. And it's a fair bet that Jung actually took this from William James, whom he read and admired, and that there's a possibility that our individual minds can touch that larger mind, that oversoul.
What I find so attractive about William James is that he is a visionary in the sense that he thought the world was open to all kinds of possibilities. He wanted to explore all these different sort of dimensions of reality. And yet he was also very comfortable living with uncertainty and ambiguity and the prospect that we would never know anything for certain. I mean, those are kind of two qualities that rarely go together, I think.
I think you are exactly right on that one. And one of the hallmarks of James's mind is this ability to hold conflicting points of view in his own mind, I think. And he doesn't try to slick it up into a unified system for us. He's willing to let it sit out there. And it is one of the deeply attractive things about him.
Now, he had a number of personal struggles himself, didn't he? I mean, for one thing, he said that he had to struggle with melancholy throughout his whole life.
That is true. It was worst, I think, in the teenage years or the early 20s when he didn't know really what he was going to do for a profession. And the person that he loved most, Minnie Temple, died on him.
And he had some sort of terrifying experience shortly after she died.
And he had a terrifying experience, very reminiscent of an experience his father had had after Minnie died, that he was alone in an asylum with a green-skinned idiot. And suddenly James saw that that figure he was looking at was potentially him, and that there was just about nothing separating him from the sort of chattering abyss of insanity. And he pulled back from that, he said, and was not the same for months after that.
When you say he had a vision, this wasn't a dream. This was some sort of a vision in a waking state?
Apparently. The only way we know it is that the account of it is in the Varieties of Religious Experience, and it's attributed there to a Frenchman. But it's not a Frenchman. It's James's own. But he didn't want to put his own name on it.
Didn't he used to keep a journal? And those particular pages that, you know, would have been the time when this happened, he ripped out of his journal?
Yeah. Yeah, they're gone. One really does wonder.
Let's talk some about the influence of William James over the years. I suppose perhaps the most famous acolyte was Bill Wilson, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, who credited William James's ideas with some of the core principles of AA, right?
That's right. Bill Wilson called James the unacknowledged founder of AA because Wilson got the idea of trying to make William James's notions of conversion available on a wholesale basis, meaning to anybody who wanted.
What did he mean by conversion?
Conversion is this moment in which the way you have been will no longer do. The moment, for example, in AA comes when you admit your helplessness and your hopelessness, and you admit that you are no longer in charge of your own life.
So to some degree, you are surrendering to a higher power.
The self-surrender is crucial, and every religious tradition going back into Sufism and Christian mysticism all insist on this, that you have to arrive at the helplessness of the individual. And that admission of powerlessness in some way I don't understand, but I've been told again and again and again, that's the gate.
Why are you so interested in William James? I mean, you wrote your biography some years back. You've now edited a collection of his essays. Why do you keep coming back to him?
Well, he's one of the people whose books I pick up when I need help, when I need to be cheered up about the world or about my own life. I find reading Thoreau, Emerson, and perhaps above all, William James, the way out for me, or a way forward. I mean, he has a wonderful argument on the moral equivalent of war. Perhaps the central piece of his work, in his own view, is an essay called On a Certain Blindness in Human Beings, in which he talks about our absolute inability to understand the motives of people unlike ourselves. I think that's so deeply needed today and so relevant to my own life as I look around me all the time, that I don't know where better to find a more lively, more sympathetic mind.
Robert Richardson, the James biographer who's edited a collection of essays called The Heart of William James. He talked with Steve Paulson.